The X Zone Radio Show with Rob McConnell is largely an opinion talk show. All opinions, comments, or statements of fact expressed by Rob McConnell's guests are strictly their own and are not to be construed as those of the X Zone Radio Show or endorsed in any manner by Rob McConnell, Realmar McConnell Media Company, the X Zone Broadcast Network, its affiliated networks, stations, employees, or advertisers.
All Hit Radio.
Welcome to the X Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
And welcome to the X Zone, everyone. My name is Rob McConnell, and the X Zone is a place where people dare to believe and dare to be heard. It's a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. And the X Zone comes to you Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern until 2 a.m. Eastern, right here on the X Zone Broadcast Network, Talkstar Radio Network, Mutual Broadcast Network, and Simul Radio and Simul TV. If you would like to send me an email, xzone@xzoneradiotv.com is my email address, and on all social media sites, X Zone Radio TV. My guest this first hour of tonight's show is Richard Alabon, and Richard is, let me see, he's always been slow, methodical, inventive, and somewhat autistic. His childhood experience of telepathy led him to a lifetime of searching for an understanding. There must be an answer, he thought. Active membership of the Society for Psychical Research helped with much background information, while practical instruction in trance, meditation, and mediumship completed a general view of the subject. Joining me now from the United Kingdom is Richard Alabon. And Richard, welcome to the X Zone.
Yes. Yeah. Hello there, Rob.
Nice having you back with us, Richard. When did your interest in the paranormal first start?
Well, a long, long time ago, 85 years ago, my mother said to me when I was a little boy, think of a number and I'll tell you what it is. Mm-hmm. And she did. She could read my mind. And that happened several times. And then I got sort of excited about it. And I said, well, how does that work? And from that time on, I have been trying to discover what the paranormal is all about.
How would you describe, or to what definition would you give the word paranormal?
It's things out of the normal, but for me, they are normal. In fact, I hosted a lot of shows entitled Paranormal is Normal. Spoke mm-hmm. to a lot of people who had a lot to say about telepathy and all these paranormal things. We tend not to believe these things because the evidence is a little bit obscure and difficult, you see. But in actual fact, the evidence is there. There is telepathy and there is spiritual mediumship mm-hmm. and all sorts of things which we don't understand, but the evidence is strong enough for us to say categorically that paranormal is normal. So there has to be an answer.
When you say evidence, what kind of evidence is there to substantiate the scientific existence of the paranormal?
Well, yes, I know that's a difficult one. The best scientific evidence, for my mind, is, mm-hmm. is what's known as the Ganzfeld, which is putting people into a particular state of mind where they go into trance and telepathic images can be images can be transmitted telepathically. And that is the best evidence that we have. But there's an awful lot of different aspects of the mm-hmm. paranormal, which have their own evidence, but it only happens occasionally. It's rare, you see, and this is what makes life difficult as far as parapsychologists are concerned.
How does the Ganzfeld work, or Ganzfeld test work?
Well, the people are put into a trance state by having ping pong balls put over their eyes and in sitting in a red light, laying down in a very relaxed state. And they have earphones with a hissing noise, a white noise. Mm-hmm. And this puts people into what is best described as the dream state. Not dreaming, but wide awake. And then somebody else in a room a little way away, somebody who, generally speaking, is friendly or a relative or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the person in the other room has a picture to look at. And the person then in trance tries to visualize and remember aspects of that picture. And then it works. That's all one can say about it.
But isn't it important that we understand how it works in order to add credibility to it, that there's nothing more to it than just saying it works? Don't we need to know how it works?
Well, of course we do. That's what I've been trying to sort out right. for 85 years. And I'm fairly confident that I've got it sorted out. There is a perfectly good train of evidence and scientific reasoning which proves the point that there is a good explanation for the paranormal. And it starts, of course, with this problem of biology. Biologists have got their science in a muddle, and they know it's in a muddle, and everybody has been saying for 75 years that DNA mm-hmm. is a book of instructions, but it is not a book of instructions. It's something else. DNA controls life, but in a completely different way to what the biologists have been telling us for years and years.
Sir, how do you know biologists are wrong and you're right?
Well, I went to the Royal Institution in London a year or so ago, mm-hmm. and this was a very high-profile conference about a big study to try and sort out the fundamental problem of biology. Mm-hmm. And they failed. They knew that they had no answer to the fact that DNA controls life, but they don't know how. And that for me was a very important point. And in fact, there was a fellow from Canada, from Toronto University there, and he said that the biology is in a mess. We need a new core theory, and it's a new core theory that I've got round to working out over the years, and it is the fact that it's instead of thinking of DNA as a book of instructions, mm-hmm. you just have to think of it as a personal identity for each individual. We are copies of our parents, and our DNA mm-hmm. is half our father as DNA and half our mother's DNA. Mm-hmm. And the copying process of life as a child is growing in the womb, it gets its the information for growth. It gets from its parents, mm-hmm. and the DNA is like a telephone number, in that the child growing recognizes the DNA of its mother and father and right. will accept the growth information. And so that is why a child is born like its father. The father had big ears and the child will have big ears or blue eyes or whatever. We all know that. We know that's how things work.
All right, Richard, stand by. We've got to take our first break. Exonation, our guest this hour is Richard Alabonin. Richard, am I pronouncing your family name correctly?
Yeah, Alabone, yes.
Alabone, okay. And he published in the year 2009 a book entitled Sublimity. And we'll be back talking to Richard on the other side of this commercial break as we continue here in the X Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Niagara, Ontario, Canada. Don't forget, if you'd like to send me an email, it's very simple, xzone@xzoneradiotv.com. And for all the programming we have available for you 24/7, 365 on the X-Zone Broadcast Network, visit www.xzbn.net. I'm Rob McConnell. This is the X-Zone. Don't go away. Exonation, Richard Alabone is our special guest this hour. And Richard, would it be fair to say then that the DNA is the cellular fingerprint to an individual?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. We all know that it's so. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a person's DNA can right. be profiled. And if you, and it can be held in a court of law to prove whether a particular person, it's like a fingerprint. You see?
Okay. So how do you come to the conclusion that DNA could resolve the problems of understanding the paranormal?
Well, yes. You have to think of DNA not as a book of instructions, but as just as a code, mm-hmm. and the code then allows information for growth, biological growth, copying the parents, copying the species, and that process demands some sort of carrier, like radio, if you like, but it's not an electromagnetic carrier, it's a quantum carrier, and that does the copying, and part of that copying copies not only features and heart and lungs and so on, but it also copies memories, instincts, and that same system is what creates telepathy in later life. So that is the relationship between the paranormal and this new way of looking at biology.
All right, I where did you get your accreditation or the education that it must take in order to understand the biomolecular aspects of DNA?
Well, I was an engineer, okay. So and I had no training in biology whatsoever.
Right.
But I've looked at the problem of the paranormal and then into biology from an engineering point of view. I was a development engineer.
Right.
Having to design things and think about things and decide how and why things work.
Mm-hmm.
And if, so I was all the time trying to discover what is wrong with biology, the idea that DNA is a book of instructions. And biologists know it isn't a book of instructions. And then the obvious answer is what we all know. We are copies of our parents. The only problem is, how does this copying process work?
All right. Now, I understand that, you know, you have a an in-depth knowledge of engineering, but isn't engineering a far cry from genetics?
Oh, yeah, of course it is. But I've, you know, I have some books on genetics, but mainly I've studied on the internet, looking things up on the internet just to discover how things work, what people think about things, you know, and just delving into some of the fundamental bits of biology.
I can understand that, and I can appreciate that you have a keen interest in biology, and that you certainly have had a career in engineering. But I'm having problems giving credibility to someone who hasn't taken the educational route when it comes to genetics through the higher halls of wisdom, so to speak, coming up with a theory and telling and saying that biologists are wrong, that you're right. I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I can see your point of view, but it was 35 years ago
mm-hmm.
that I realized there was a problem with biology. And in fact, I did a lecture. I made a lecture to the Society of Psychical Research,
mm-hmm.
and saying that there is a great link between biology and telepathy and so on. And it was only when I attended this conference in London mm-hmm. 18 months ago, where the biologists were admitting to themselves that it is DNA is not a book of instructions, and they know it controls life, but they don't know how. And that, for me, was a very important thing.
But is this idea that DNA is not a book of instructions shared by all biologists, or just those who were at the conference where you were?
I would think it's probably only 10% of biologists are prepared to admit that there's a fundamental problem.
So what happens if the biologists who are saying that there's a fundamental problem, and we're talking about, in your own words, 10% of the biologists, how do we know they're right and the other 90% are wrong?
Yeah, well, we don't. But it's only by weighing up all the evidence, all the different little bits and pieces of the puzzle, which fit together like a jigsaw puzzle. And it does all fit together.
Now, once again, I have to go back to your very own words where you say 90% disagree with the 10%. So how could 90% of the biologists be so wrong and only 10% so right?
Well, it started to go wrong in 1944 when a Nobel Prize winner, Schrodinger his name was,
mm-hmm.
Said that effectively that DNA is a book of instructions. And biologists have not been able to come up with any alternative idea in that 75 years.
But you yourself said, sir, that we are part 50% of our mother, 50% of our father. And if the DNA doesn't give the instructions as to our makeup, where does that instruction come from?
The instruction comes by copying the parents.
I understand that, sir, but how is it relayed during the development of the new person that 50% is the mother, 50% is the father, mother, blue eyes, green, brown hair, and so on, if not from the DNA? And if not from the DNA, from where?
It's only a matter of visualizing that there has to be a carrier of information.
But what is that carrier?
Well, I've sorted out what it probably is, and it's spinning particles of quartz.
Quartz?
Quartz.
as found in radios, right?
Yes, that's right. They use silica quartz, silicon chips.
Yeah, for channels and frequency finders,
And they also use it for DNA work, because DNA tends to stick to quartz because it's, if you get a quartz crystal, is a spiral helix, which is like the same sort of thing as DNA is, and that's no coincidence, the fact that they are the same.
So if DNA is not the instruction manual of the creation, and I'm using this term, the instructions for making this new being that is being created by the sperm of the father and the egg of the mother combining, and then you have the cell duplication and replication and so on. If this is not the responsibility or the job of DNA to create life, well, what is the use of DNA?
It's just like a telephone number. It ensures that the information which is flowing in the ether all over from all the people in the world.
Right.
There's a massive flow of information, like the flow of information on cell phones. But it's only when somebody rings your cell phone number that the connection is made and your phone rings and you can speak to whoever it was. So,
all right. I hate to interrupt you, but I do have to take my break, sir. Please stand by. ExoNation, Richard Alabone is our special guest. And we'll both be back on the other side of this commercial break with the news as we continue here in the X-Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Niagara, Ontario, Canada. My name is Rob McConnell. This is the X-Zone. Don't go away. Welcome back, everyone. Richard Alabone is our special guest. His website is tomakesenseoflife.com. That's tomakesenseoflife.com. All right, Richard. So, as you see it, the DNA is like we'll use the analogy that you used before you went to the news of being our own private individual cell phone number or fingerprint. Why is this necessary?
Well, it's very necessary because there would be no life if there was no copying mechanism between members of a species, whether that species is a bacteria or a virus or a mouse or whatever.
Okay. All right, then I must have misunderstood something here, because I was under the understanding, based on what we were talking about before, that DNA has nothing to do with the replication process between a mother and a father, and how the child has the similarities of one or the other. Am I correct there?
Yes. DNA controls life. That's the best way of looking at it. It controls life.
Okay.
But it doesn't control as if it was a book of instructions or some system for controlling. It is just an aid to the copying mechanism. And the copying mechanism has mm-hmm. to involve this carrier. One of the big aspects of all this is how does the information get into the cells, and how does that contrive to make a cell to make cells split in the correct way? It's known as differentiation. A cell will sometimes split to make a cell the same as itself, mm-hmm. or it sometimes, if it was a muscle cell, it might then have to create a split into a bone cell.
Sure.
And that information has to be transmitted in some way.
So would you say that DNA is the carrier of genetic information?
It allows the carrier, but it isn't the carrier itself, no. It allows the carrier, which is, I've suggested, is spinning quartz particles, and they are picked up by tubes in every living cell, every okay. cell that's ever been in the last 100 million years has what are known as microtubules, little tiny microscopic tubes, which scientists can see with these clever microscopes right. and things, but they don't know what they're for.
So would you agree with the following statement, and this is by Francis Crick, who is the co-discoverer of the structure of DNA molecules. He summed up the central dogma of molecular biology as follows. DNA makes RNA, RNA makes protein, and protein makes us. DNA tells cells what proteins to make indirectly through a process called transcription or translation.
Yes, that was what was thought of at the time.
But it's still thought of now in mainstream bioscience.
It is indeed. Yeah. I accept that. But it's how does what is known as differentiation work? How does a cell split to be different sometimes? Sometimes it will make it a cell the same as itself. Sometimes it will be a different cell. We are composed of, I think it's 200 million different sorts mm-hmm. of cells. And it's this process of differentiation which biologists do not understand.
So why would they then call, and this is according to the majority of bioscientists, that DNA is the blueprint of life?
Yes, it's just the way you look at it. It looks as if it's a blueprint, but it is not. It is just like a telephone number.
But that is according to you, and 10% of the scientists or the biologists who attended this seminar. It's not the thought of mainstream science.
No, no, I agree. You're absolutely right. I'm not trying to pretend that this, but there are plenty of scientists who accept that there is a problem, that biology is in a mess. It's a fellow at Toronto University said it's in a mess. And it is.
But
they don't know how differentiation works.
But, sir, that's according to you, and no disrespect. You have no experience. You may have experience, but you do not have any education when it comes to science or bioscience. So how can you be so confident that these people are right, the 10% are right, and the 90% are wrong, and academia is wrong?
I accept your way of looking at things, mm-hmm. but the fact is that we have to find an explanation for the paranormal.
But in looking for an explanation for the paranormal, do we have to say that science is wrong and some theories pertaining to DNA actually explain the paranormal? And I might add at this point, these theories that cannot be proven scientifically.
I hear what you say.
Yeah. In your belief or based on your theory, are the four base strands included? And I'm talking about the A strand, the C strand, G strand, and T strand when it comes to the DNA makeup.
I don't know that the... It's the DNA and RNA, which mm-hmm. went before it,
yeah.
are incredibly complicated
right.
systems. And it's only complicated in that we look and see, we can see what's going on, we're learning how it what things look like, mm-hmm. but we have no process of differentiation. We have no process by which DNA controls life, and it is only by looking at the science of biology in a very different light mm-hmm. that we can begin to understand how it works.
How do you intend on doing that?
Well, I've written a book, and I've written two books.
Okay.
I wrote a book called Sublimity first. That was about 10 or 15 years ago. And I just sort of outlined my theory in that book. And then I've had two editions of my current book, Making Sense of Life. And in that book is all the evidence which fits together like a crossword puzzle, you see, like a jigsaw puzzle, sorry.
Has your book been peer-reviewed?
It hasn't really, no. I have lectured to the Scientific and Medical Network, which is a society based mainly in Europe, mm-hmm. sort of worldwide, really. And I lectured to them, and they do not like my suggestions. Scientists are very, very wary of an engineer who thinks he's got the answer to biology.
Well, I can kind of understand their feelings. But if you have the answers and they can be proven right, what would they have to lose?
Eventually, I'm quite confident, eventually the scientists are going to have to say, yes, we have to think of DNA in a different way. It works in a different way, and it fits in with all other problems.
All right, stand by, sir. We've got to take our final break. Exxon Nation, Richard Alabon is our special guest. His website is tomakesenseoflife.com, and we'll both be back as we wrap up this hour here in the Exxon from our broadcast center and studios in Niagara, Ontario, Canada. And welcome back, everyone. Richard Alabon is our guest this hour. His website is tomakesenseoflife.com. We were talking about your theory in the previous three segments, and in the last segment you were saying that you had basically, if I understood right, presented your hypothesis to the scientific community, and it did not go over very well. If it didn't go over very well, what was the main bone of contention with the scientific community when it came to your presentation?
I don't know. I think it involves so many different aspects of science that the scientists, can't get their head around it. It's only by looking at all the different aspects of the science, which I've spelled out in my book. Mm-hmm. One of the big scientific things about all this is that in every living cell we have microtubules, which physically organize the splitting of a cell. The microtubules are, in fact, the nervous system that we have in our bodies. The microtubules, in fact, are organized sense of smell, sight, sound.
All right, let me ask you this, because we're running out of time very fast. Who does agree with you?
Well, the scientific and medical network have a magazine, and I submitted an article, and it was rejected, and they said, "What on earth is this man talking about?" Mm-hmm. Nothing that any scientist understands.
Right.
The book was reviewed by the editor a year or so later. And he said that it presents a reasonable theory as to understanding a new paradigm for DNA and whatever.
Oh, all right. So only the editor has agreed with you?
Yes, more or less. What he said, he said, "The content of the book is stimulating, informed, and wide-ranging in terms of its discussion of evidence that a paradigm shift is required in biology and psychology."
Okay. So
that was published in the Scientific and Medical Network magazine. So
once again, if my math is correct, you have 90% of the scientific and biological community who do not agree with you. The only person who does agree with you is your editor.
Well, it's not my editor, he's the editor of the Scientific and Medical Network magazine.
Okay, so what did the members and the readers of that magazine have to say about your theory?
Nothing.
What does that tell you, sir?
It tells me that that's the way science works. Scientists have to be very cagey about accepting new ideas and new theories, especially where the evidence is somewhat obscure and hidden, which all this is, of course.
If you would be a bona fide member of the scientific community and you presented this argument to your fellow scientists, do you think the reaction would be any different?
I don't think it would, no. I mean, the scientists try and weigh up the evidence of a new idea, a new theory, a new process.
But if that was the case, sir, how would we have the scientific discoveries and the medical discoveries that we have today if that was true?
Just by sheer hard work of biologists and scientists. That's scientists work. Science works in a particular way, and mm-hmm. Things. Somebody does an experiment, it then it's written up in as a paper,
sure.
And it is peer reviewed, mm-hmm. and so on.
So, based on my question to you and your answer, that you do not believe that there would be any change in the reaction from the scientific community, even if you were an accepted member of that community, why do you persist in believing that your hypothesis is correct?
Because it answers so many other questions.
Such as?
The second chapter of my book is entitled... it's entitled Things That Don't Make Sense. Biology is one of them. Differentiation and is inexplicable. And DNA...
Okay, but let me ask you this question. What other aspects of the paranormal besides what we've been talking about this hour does your theory give credence to and give an explanation to?
It gives an explanation to all the paranormal because it gives one it's part of the growth process, has to involve information from mind to mind. And that's it.
So how does it explain ghosts?
Ghosts are what? Well, ghost hunters refer to stone tape recordings where information is stored in the quartz and stones of a building,
mm-hmm.
and occasionally it sort of leaks out. It's like.
But what about the ghost investigators or researchers or wannabe researchers who claim that they can go to certain locations and interact with these spirits or these ghosts in an intelligent manner?
Yeah, I think that's all for the television, to be quite honest.
So you don't agree with that?
No.
How does your theory relate to reincarnation?
Reincarnation is known as the world's greatest mystery. But the evidence is quite easily explainable when viewed as inheritance with the wrong person.
Inheritance with the wrong person.
See, we inherit mm-hmm. mainly from our parents.
Right.
Okay, blue eyes, brown hair.
Gotcha.
But if somebody a few miles away has similar DNA, a child can link with that person after about 6 months.
Conception,
right? And a child will make contact with some person, and the evidence of reincarnation, where phobias and marks on the skin and all these things, look like inheritance.
All right, sir. I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been a rather unique, strange, baffling hour. I don't believe one bit of it. I'll stick my hat in the arena with the 90% of the scientists, biologists, and geneticists who think that your theory sucks. Man, your theories have more holes in them than a piece of cheese in the fridge of Billy Myers in Switzerland. I'm sorry, I cannot buy it. Especially the last part, where you're telling me that information from a person can be transmitted to a fetus in the mother's womb when the child is in womb and 6 months old and over. Man, what do you smoke? I've heard ridiculous things in my time, but I'll tell you something. Your theory is up there. Your theories are up there. And no wonder only the editor of the magazine who had the balls enough to publish an article about your book and your theories. So 90% of scientists disagree with you. 10% who are fringe agree with you. And nobody who read the article agrees with you, except the editor. Man, if that doesn't tell you that you're talking about a lot of bullshit, nothing else will. I'll be back on the other side of this commercial break as we continue here in the X-Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Niagara, Ontario, Canada. To my producer and master control, Craig, get the cleanup crew in here. There's more bullshit here than there is in most bull farms. I'm Rob McConnell. Don't go away.